Welcome to session number 16 in our Christian Decision-Making Seminar. Now, our plans for this session are to cover two more biblical guidelines for making right decisions, namely number 18, or R, good advice may come from an unbeliever, while bad advice may come from a believer. And number 19, or S, sometimes the right decision does not seem logical. So let's start with guideline number 18, or R. Good advice may come from an unbeliever, while bad advice may come from a believer. I'm sure we can all identify and agree with the last part of guideline number 18. That is, bad advice may come from a believer. We probably all had that experience because we tend to let our guards down when the advice or counsel is coming from a fellow believer. After all, this is godly counsel from a brother or sister who has our best interests in view. Oh, really? Not so fast. Your best interests may not be in view by this fellow believer. Now, we've already talked about hidden agendas that even fellow believers may have concerning your life. And there is always the possibility of jealousy and selfishness on the part of a fellow believer who is giving you advice. That's why Proverbs 11 verse 14 says, "Where there is no guidance, the people fall, but in the abundance of counselors, there is victory." Proverbs 11:14. That is, many counselors. In the abundance of counselors, there is victory. So we need advice, but be careful about taking advice from only one fellow believer. It may be bad advice for any number of reasons. Illustration. I remember a Christian brother advising me not to give to a certain Christian ministry because they already had enough money. Now, that sounded like good advice, but I decided to check it out. It turned out that the Christian man who had given me the advice was in the same church as the director of this particular ministry, and he was jealous of all the limelight that the director of this ministry was receiving. In fact, the ministry was a good and expanding ministry, and they were not oversupplied with money, and they had a real need. So here was a case of bad advice from a believer who was jealous. So check out advice that's coming from fellow believers. Let's take a biblical example. Turn to 1 Kings chapter 13. Here we have the unusual story of a prophet from Judah who was sent by the Lord to Bethel in the northern kingdom of Israel to pronounce judgment upon the shrine of the golden calf that Jeroboam I had wrongly set up there at Bethel. After his confrontation with King Jeroboam, the prophet was on his way home to Judah as the Lord directed him. But then he was wrongly advised by another older prophet not to return directly home, but to stay around for a while and have some fellowship. Let's pick up the story in verse 11. I'm reading from 1 Kings chapter 13, beginning at verse 11. "Now an old prophet was living in Bethel, and his sons came and told him all the deeds which the man of God had done that day in Bethel, the words which he had spoken to the king. These also they related to their father. Their father said to them, 'Which way did he go?' Now his sons had seen the way which the man of God who came from Judah had gone. Then he said to his sons, 'Saddle a donkey for me.' So they saddled a donkey for him, and he rode away on it. So he went after the man of God and found him sitting under an oak. And he said to him, 'Are you the man of God who came from Judah?' And he said, 'I am.' Then he said to him, 'Come home with me and eat bread.' He said, 'I cannot return with you, nor go with you, nor will I eat bread or drink water with you in this place. For a command came to me by the word of the Lord. You shall eat no bread nor drink water there. Do not return by going the way which you came.' He said to him, 'I also am a prophet like you. And an angel spoke to me by the word of the Lord, saying, "Bring him back with you to your house that he may eat bread and drink water." But he lied to him. So he went back with him and ate bread in his house and drank water. Now it came about as they were sitting down at the table that the word of the Lord came to the prophet who had brought him back. And he cried to the man of God who came from Judah, saying, "Thus says the Lord, because you have disobeyed the command of the Lord and have not observed the commandment which the Lord your God commanded you, but have returned and eaten bread and drunk water in the place of which he said to you, eat no bread and drink no water, your body shall not come to the grave of your fathers. It came about after he had eaten bread and after he had drunk that he saddled the donkey for him with a prophet whom he had brought back. Now when he had gone, a lion met him on the way and killed him, and his body was thrown on the road with the donkey standing beside it. The lion also was standing beside the body. And behold, men passed by and saw the body thrown on the road and the lion standing beside the body. So they came and told it in the city where the old prophet lived. Now when the prophet who brought him back from the way heard it, he said, it is the man of God who disobeyed the command of the Lord. Therefore the Lord has given him to the lion, which has torn him and killed him according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke to him. Then he spoke to his son, saying, saddle the donkey for me. And they saddled it. He went and found his body thrown on the road with the donkey and the lion standing beside the body. The lion had not eaten the body nor torn the donkey. So the prophet took up the body of the man of God and laid it on the donkey and brought it back. And he came to the city of the old prophet to mourn and to bury him. He laid his body in his own grave, and they mourned over him, saying, alas, my brother. It came about after he had buried him that he spoke to his son, saying, when I die, bury me in the grave in which the man of God is buried. Lay my bones beside his bones. For the thing shall surely come to pass, which he cried by the word of the Lord against the altar in Bethel and against all the houses of the high places which are in the cities of Samaria. From 1 Kings chapter 13, verses 11 through 32. In 2 Kings chapter 23, we read that about 300 years later, at the time of King Josiah's revival, the younger prophet's prophecies of judgment upon the shrine at Bethel were all fulfilled. But the point that we're making from this unusual event here is that while the younger prophet obeyed the Lord in pronouncing the judgment, he disobeyed the Lord when it came to his travel itinerary, and it cost him his life. And what was the key to his downfall? He took bad advice from a fellow prophet. Now, this was not a false prophet of the foreign gods and foreign religions. No, this was a true older prophet of the Lord from the godly remnant of the northern kingdom of Israel who had stayed in the north after the kingdom split. Many of the godly in the north at that time migrated south to be near Jerusalem and the temple where true worship of the Lord took place. This older prophet, however, remained in the north and probably was jealous of this younger prophet who was being called of the Lord to minister in the north. Probably the older, more mature prophet felt he was being overlooked. So out of jealousy, he wanted to get a piece of the action, and he lied to the younger prophet. And the younger prophet took the bad advice from this fellow prophet. After all, he was an older, more mature prophet. Do you see the lesson for decision-making here? Be warned. Bad advice can come from a fellow believer when you least expect it. Illustration. You know, when I was in the process of leaving secular employment to enter the Lord's work full-time, I was greatly encouraged by many believers. However, there was one woman in our church that thought I was making a mistake. She essentially told me that I was throwing away my career. After all, I had a hard-earned PhD in material science and was beginning to move up the proverbial corporate ladder. What made the situation more confusing to me at the time was that this advice was not coming from a nominal Christian woman or a worldly Christian woman. No, I considered this lady as one of the godly women at our church. Now, as I look back now, and see that the Lord really was leading me out of secular employment at that time, I realized that this woman's counsel was bad advice. Bad advice may come from a believer. Now, the Lord used this experience because as a result, I rethought and reprayed through my whole decision-making process concerning what the Lord was calling me to do in life. And it certainly taught me this biblical guideline for decision-making, that bad advice may come from a believer. Now, what about the first part of this guideline? Good advice may come from an unbeliever. What? Good advice can come from an unbeliever? Is that possible? Does God ever do that to guide us in our decision-making process? Answer, yes, he does. Let's take a biblical example. Turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 35. This is at the time of King Josiah of Judah. Josiah was one of the good kings of Judah, and probably the greatest revival in Israel's history took place during his reign in 621 BC. But here in the last section of chapter 35 of 2 Chronicles, good King Josiah makes a bad decision. In fact, he disobeys the word of the Lord, and it leads to his death. And the significant point here is that the word of the Lord comes through a non-believer. Let's read the account. I'm reading from 2 Chronicles chapter 35, beginning with verse 20. After all this, when Josiah had set the temple in order, Necho, king of Egypt, came up to make war at Carchemish on the Euphrates, and Josiah went out to engage him. But Necho sent messengers to him, saying, "What are we to do with each other, O king of Judah? I am not coming against you today, but against the house with which I am at war. And God has ordered me to hurry. Stop for your own sake from interfering with God, who is with me, that he may not destroy you." However, Josiah would not turn away from him, but disguised himself in order to make war with him. Nor did he listen to the words of Necho from the mouth of God, but came to make war on the plain of Megiddo. The archers shot King Josiah. And the king said to his servants, "Take me away, for I am badly wounded." So his servants took him out of the chariot and carried him in the second chariot, which he had, and brought him to Jerusalem, where he died and was buried in the tombs of his fathers. And all Judah and Jerusalem mourned for Josiah. Then Jeremiah chanted a lament for Josiah, and all the male and female singers speak about Josiah in their lamentations to this day, and they made them an ordinance in Israel. Behold, they are also written in the Lamentations. From 2 Chronicles chapter 35, verses 20 through 25. The year was 609 BC. Egypt and Babylon were vying for power, now that Assyria was no longer the major power. Pharaoh Necho, the pagan ruler of Egypt, traveled north through Israel to meet and make war with the Babylonian forces at Carchemish, where one of the well-known battles of ancient history took place. Josiah, for some reason, tried to stop Pharaoh Necho from moving his army through Israel, probably to win favor with the Babylonians. In any event, Pharaoh Necho told Josiah to move aside. He was not at war with Judah. He was only at war with Babylon. In fact, this pagan Pharaoh claimed that God had ordered him to hurry. In verse 21, he told Josiah, "Stop for your own sake from interfering with God, who is with me, that he may not destroy you." Now notice again verse 22. However, Josiah would not turn away from him, but disguised himself in order to make war with him, nor did he listen to the words of Necho from the mouth of God, but came to make war on the plain of Megiddo. Here is a clear biblical case where God spoke through an unbeliever. Pharaoh Necho was certainly not a believer. He was the pagan king of Egypt. And yet the one true God, the God of Israel, revealed himself to Pharaoh Necho and communicated with him and through him to Josiah. Now this is certainly not the norm, then or today, but God can definitely use unbelievers to speak to believers in certain situations. Illustration. Again, back to when I was thinking seriously about leaving secular employment to enter the Lord's work full time. At first, I thought that maybe I could do both. So I wrote a letter to the director of the Research and Development Laboratories of Johns Manville Corporation, where I was working at the time, requesting a leave of absence for the summer in order to do Christian camp work at the camp where we had worked during my time in graduate school. I was hoping that this request would be approved on the basis of the company wanting to get involved in some kind of social and humanitarian outreach, which seemed to be the going and growing thing for large corporations back in the late 60s and early 70s. Well, I'll never forget the response I received about 2 weeks later. My non-Christian boss, two levels up, called me into his large office, sat me down, looked me straight in the eye, and said, "You know, Dave, you've got to decide whether or not you really want to serve the Lord." Wow. It was like the voice of God. And there's no doubt in my mind, then or today, that the Lord was speaking to me through the words of this unbeliever. And it was definitely guidance from the Lord in my decision-making process. Good advice may come from an unbeliever. And that unbeliever may be an unbelieving parent or neighbor or teacher or boss or even a casual contact. Good advice may come from an unbeliever. Our next biblical guideline for making right decisions is number 19, or S. Sometimes the right decision does not seem logical. Sometimes the right decision does not seem logical. Most of our decisions as believers are logical and should be logical. We belabored this point that as Christians, we don't kiss our brains goodbye in the decision-making process. Walking by faith does not mean that you throw caution or common sense to the wind. However, because we are Christians, there will be times when we make decisions that do not seem logical. That is logical to the world, or even to some other believers who don't know all the details of the situation. Now, for our first scripture for this biblical guideline, turn to 1 Samuel chapter 14. 1 Samuel chapter 14. Here in this chapter, the Israeli army under King Saul was facing the Philistines in the hill country north of Jerusalem. And here we see faithful Jonathan, King Saul's son, making a very courageous decision along with his loyal armor bearer. Let's pick up the story beginning with verse 6. I'm reading from 1 Samuel chapter 14, beginning with verse 6. Then Jonathan said to the young man who was carrying his armor, "Come and let us cross over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. Perhaps the Lord will work for us, for the Lord is not restrained to save by many or by few." His armor bearer said to him, "Do all that is in your heart. Turn yourself, and here I am with you according to your desire." Then Jonathan said, "Behold, we will cross over to the men and reveal ourselves to them. If they say to us, 'Wait until we come to you,' then we will stand in our place and not go up to them. But if they say, 'Come up to us,' then we will go up, for the Lord has given them into our hands, and this shall be the sign to us." When both of them revealed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines said, "Behold, Hebrews are coming out of the holes where they have hidden themselves." So the men of the garrison hailed Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, "Come up to us and we will tell you something." And Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "Come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hands of Israel." Then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and feet and with his armor bearer behind him. And they fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer put some to death after him. That first slaughter which Jonathan and his armor bearer made was about 20 men within about half a furrow in an acre of land. From 1 Samuel chapter 14, verses 6 through 14. And as we read on, we see that this courageous act on the part of Jonathan and his armor bearer led to the whole army of the Philistines being scattered before Israel. So that we read in verse 23, "So the Lord delivered Israel that day, and the battle spread beyond Beth-Aven." So clearly, Jonathan made a right decision here. And we have to believe that the Lord overruled and led him to make this decision, because it was not based on logic. I mean, two men going up in broad daylight to single-handedly attack a whole garrison of the Philistines? Why not at least get some reinforcements? After all, this was not a secret surprise maneuver. It was in broad daylight, in the sight of the whole Philistine garrison. Now, it's true that Jonathan gave the Lord an opportunity to close the door if the Philistines had said, "We'll come down to you." But still, it was not a decision based on logic. And Jonathan's courage here was not what made it right either. Remember, Peter also showed a lot of courage when he made that bad decision and wrongly cut off the ear of the high priest's servant. So we have to assume that Jonathan stepped out in true faith and made his courageous decision based on definite guidance from the Lord against what would be considered normal logic. But sometimes the right decision does not seem logical. Notice, by the way, that I did not say that Jonathan made his decision against all odds. No, because one plus God is always a majority. And Jonathan knew that truth, as we see from what he says in verse 6. Then Jonathan said to his young man, who was carrying his armor, "Come and let us cross over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. Perhaps the Lord will work for us, for the Lord is not restrained to save by many or by few." So all of these factors go into many of our decision-making processes as Christians following God's will. But to the world, and even sometimes to fellow believers, sometimes the right decision does not seem logical. Illustration. Back when I was in graduate school, I made a decision that was not logical. That is, not logical to the normal way of thinking of things through natural eyes. Now, you understand that every graduate program is different depending on the university and department, on policy and politics, etc., etc. Well, I was working on my PhD in materials science at Rutgers University in New Jersey, and I had finished all my required coursework and was involved in doing the research on my thesis. A Christian camp for boys in New York State called and asked if we could come and help out during that coming summer season. One reason was because they needed a camp nurse, and Margie is a nurse. After prayer, Margie and I felt strongly that this was the will of the Lord. Now, I shared this with some of the guys in my department who were also going for their PhDs and who were attending a Bible study I was teaching. A couple of them were Christians. They all essentially told me the same thing. "You're crazy. This is against all logic. If I were to take off for the summer," they said, "the powers that be would read this as a sign that I was not fully committed to the program, and furthermore, I would not do well on my qualifying examinations." Qualifying examinations in our program were a week-long battery of tests that you took after you finished your required coursework. Each professor involved gave you his own written test, and then at the end of the week, you had the oral examination, where all the professors involved, and others as well, sat around a large conference table and asked or fired questions at you, any question they wanted, even questions out of your specialized area. Now, if you did not pass these qualifying examinations, you were kindly asked to leave the program with your master's degree and get on with your life. And you know as well as I do, if they did not want you to pass, you would not pass. Well, believe me, I thought and prayed long and hard about this decision. But Margie and I still felt strongly before the Lord that we were to go and serve the Lord that summer at this Christian camp. So against all logic, I told the guys that I appreciated their counsel and advice, but that I had decided to go to the head of the department and explain my situation, that I was still fully committed to the program, but had decided to take the summer off to go and serve at this Christian camp. As to the qualifying examinations, I told my colleagues that I was going to request to take them early, before the summer, so that that hurdle would be behind me when we left for the summer and not be a nagging hindrance to our service at the camp. Needless to say, they all said it would never happen. This is totally illogical. My request would never be approved. It was against all logic. I might as well clean out my desk, pack up, leave the program, and find the best paying job I could with a master's degree. Well, guess what? Against all logic, my request was approved. And by God's grace, I passed the qualifying examinations before the summer. And when we came back from that great summer of Christian service, everything worked like clockwork in reference to my thesis research and moving ahead in the program. Clearly, God was at work here. It was against all logic, and normally I would not make this kind of decision. But I was sure in this case that God was leading us. Sometimes the right decision does not seem logical. Let's take another example from Scripture. Turn to John chapter 11. First, let's read verses 53 and 54, where the Lord makes a very logical decision. John chapter 11, verses 53 and 54. So from that day on, they plan, that is, the Jewish religious leaders, plan together to kill him. Therefore, Jesus no longer continued to walk publicly among the Jews, but went away from there to the country near the wilderness, into a city called Ephraim, or Ephraim. And there he stayed with his disciples. From John chapter 11, verses 53 and 54. It's not that the Lord is afraid here and running away. No, his time has not yet come for his crucifixion. And so the Lord makes a very logical decision here, one which we all probably would have made. The heat was on, and his hour had not yet come. And so he logically withdraws from public sight for safety. This is the norm in our decision-making process. Normally, right decisions are logical decisions. Again, the sea of common sense. But sometimes the right decision does not seem logical. Now look back at the first few verses of the chapter. In fact, let's begin by reading from John chapter 10, verse 30, where the Lord said, "I and my Father are one." Now verse 31. The Jews picked up stones again to stone him. Jesus answered them, "I showed you many good works from the Father. For which of them are you stoning me?" The Jews answered him, "For a good work we do not stone you, but for blasphemy, and because you, being a man, make yourself out to be God." Skip down now to verse 39. "Therefore they were seeking again to seize him, and he eluded their grasp. And he went away again beyond the Jordan to the place where John was first baptizing, and he was staying there." And now the first six verses of chapter 11. John chapter 11, beginning with verse 6. "Now a certain man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. It was the Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. So the sisters sent word to him, saying, 'Lord, behold, he whom you love is sick.' But when Jesus heard this, he said, 'This sickness is not to end in death, but for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified by it.'" Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that he was sick, he then stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. From John chapter 10, beginning with verse 30, selected verses down to verse 6 of chapter 11. Now here's a decision that the Lord made that does not seem logical. We know it was the right decision because it was made by the Lord. But if we did not know what was going on behind the scenes, and if we did not know the rest of the story, we might tend to question whether delaying 2 days before coming to Bethany was the most logical decision for the Lord to make. Wouldn't the Lord have been able to bring more comfort to the family and spare the family a lot of sorrow if he had come immediately? After all, Lazarus had died. Well, that decision certainly seems more logical to the normal way of thinking. In fact, it seems that this is exactly what Mary and Martha might have been saying when Martha said in verse 21, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And when Mary said in verse 32, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." But sometimes the right decision does not seem logical. Meanwhile, the disciples must have thought that the Lord was not taking action, because as they thought, he was making the logical decision to stay on the east side of the Jordan because the Jewish leaders were out to kill him. They did not know at the time that the Lord was only going to stay 2 more days. They probably logically thought that they would be in this safer location on the east side of the Jordan River for some time. were they surprised when the Lord said 2 days later, okay, boys, let's get going to Judea again. That's a paraphrase. We can tell from verse 8 that the disciples did not think that this was a logical decision. Verse 8, once again, the disciples said to him, Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you, and you were going there again? But sometimes the right decision does not seem logical. We know now why the Lord's decision was to remain 2 more days on the east side of the Jordan. But the Lord only gradually let his followers in on his plans to raise Lazarus from the dead. So from everyone's point of view at this early stage, the Lord's decision did not seem logical. But sometimes the right decision does not seem logical. The Lord knew exactly what he was doing. And there's no way anyone can say it was a bad decision or a decision that was not in the perfect will of God, because this is the Lord himself who is making this decision. But for those looking on, the decision did not seem logical at that time. Sometimes the right decision does not seem logical. Illustration. When we decided to downsize and sell our home in the Chicago area, paving the way for our eventual move here to Rhode Island, we had to make a decision as to when to put our house on the market. Now, the real estate agent mentioned several little things to do to make our house more saleable, including painting one bedroom, getting rid of some old furniture, and putting some flowers around. And any of you who have sold homes can identify with this. We made the logical decision to follow the real estate agent's advice and do these things in order to get the house ready to put on the market. Now, the real estate agent assumed that both Margie and I would be in town when the house was put on the market, so that we as the owners would be there to accept or turn down offers and make counteroffers, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I told the agent that I was in the ministry and that there was a good chance that I would be out of town on a ministry trip when an offer came through. Well, they thought this decision was not logical. They thought that I should stick around home. The idea that Margie would be there and she could make the decision alone did not seem logical to them. It was to be a husband-wife decision, signing papers, et cetera, et cetera. The idea that Margie could call me if I was out of town and we could accept or turn down the offer over the phone was not logical from their point of view, because both husband and wife as owners have to sign the papers. Well, what about the idea that they could fax the papers to me and I could sign them and fax them back? That idea did not seem logical. Nobody does this. Well, Margie and I did think this through and strongly felt that I should not cancel out on any ministry trips just because we were selling our house. And I had an important out-of-town seminar coming up when the house would be put up for sale. It was not a logical decision to leave town, but sometimes the right decision does not seem logical if the Lord is leading you step by step. And here, of course, is where you need to be sure that it is the Lord leading you and not just your own agenda. Now let me tell you the rest of the story. I went to the seminar and told my audience that I had not made a logical decision to come because we had put our house on the market, and the real estate agency strongly advised me to stay around home to sign papers, et cetera, et cetera. And some in the seminar agreed with the agency. Then I told them that I was sure that the Lord wanted me to do this seminar, and it was no problem for the Lord to sell our house with me gone, even though it may not have been a logical decision for me to leave town with a house on the market. The next day, before the morning seminar session began, Margie called me and said that we had an offer for the house. It was lower than what we were asking, so we turned down that offer, but we agreed to lower our selling price somewhat. And if the buyers agreed, then the agency would fax the papers and I would sign them during the coffee break of the morning seminar. Well, I shared all of this at the first session of the seminar that morning so that they could pray and join in the praise if the house sold. Well, guess what? The buyers did agree to the new price, and the agency did fax the contract papers, and I did sign the papers during the coffee break and fax them back. So I was able to announce at the seminar after the coffee break, amid cheers of praise the Lord, that the house was sold and no ministry time was sacrificed or lost. It was certainly not a logical decision for me to leave town with a house on the market. But when your priorities are right and you are truly putting the Lord first in your life, sometimes the right decision does not seem logical. But make sure that it is the Lord who is leading you and not just your own me first agenda. Now, in our next seminar, Lord willing, we will take up two more biblical guidelines for making good and right decisions.